Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, 95.7, The Game. Live from the DGDG.com studios on the corner of Broadway and Battery, this is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7, The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
Welcome, welcome. It is wonderful to have you. Very good, this or that. Thank you very much, Gianna, our pal Joe Fortenbaugh, hanging out with us here on a Fortenbaugh Friday. The day after the Warriors go up 3-0, Golden State has now won 19 of its last 20 playoff games overall, which is tied for the 2001-2002 Lakers for the most wins in a 20-game postseason stretch. Not bad. Not bad for a team that was trying to find its own legs before it got underway here. Very impressive win last night. If it wasn't the most impressive game, if it felt a little odd, obviously the game had quite a pall hanging over it with the passing of Aaron Popovich, but it was a win that the Warriors needed. They got, and Joe, I think you and I are in agreement that this puppy is now over, and San Antonio will probably go through the motions in this one more than we've seen any Spurs team go through the motions in 21 years of Spurs basketball. They've got to be crushed emotionally.
The upside for the Spurs is that you might be able to keep it close by the half, but nobody does third quarters like the Golden State Warriors.
No.
It's like the greatest secret in Vegas over the last 4 years betting third quarter lines on the Golden State Warriors. They dominate the third. They own the third. I don't know what they do at the half, but they are so bankable coming out of that locker room. And you've seen it in every single game against San Antonio. They have crushed them. We have not, in this series, at any point, gone into the fourth quarter with any sort of drama whatsoever. Need I say, or dare I say, this has been the most boring series of the first round. And that's meant as disrespect to the team. It's just, if you're looking for a national platform, there are a lot of series you can sell. This one, people have just checked out. It's old hat. The Warriors are dominating in the first round once again.
What is the best series so far?
It's going to end up as Utah-OKC.
Yeah, I agree.
Two so far, so we need
with
to get
my rookie of the year, Donovan Mitchell.
Donovan Mitchell's nasty. He's not rookie of the year, though. He's not going to win rookie of the year.
Well, he should be if we were using words for what they really meant. Look, I know the NBA's got its own rules.
Don't embarrass yourself with this.
I'm not embarrassing myself with
this. It's Simmons. You know it, and you're just trolling.
No, Simmons is fantastic, but you have to forget what rookie means in order to say he's the rookie of the year. You have to completely distort the word for him to fit it.
Your argument is that Mitchell should be the rookie of the year because of the definition.
Because it's his rookie year. Ben Simmons got to watch the NBA up close, cash paychecks, live NBA lifestyle, get NBA coaching, watch NBA film sessions, learn how to travel, learn how to pack, learn how to get to the airport, learn how to take a four-game roadie. Like Donovan Mitchell, why do you think in college we delineate true freshmen from redshirt freshmen? Because one ain't the same. One got to practice and look for a full year, getting ready mentally, preparing, experiencing all that is college. The kid who comes in, registers for classes, and then goes knocks down game-winning shots, that's a freshman. A rookie is a guy who is in his first go-around in the NBA. Have you ever been on a team charter before? No, because I'm a rookie. Ben Simmons was on a team charter every charter that they took 82 games last year.
I don't disagree with you. But he's not the rookie of the year by the definition. Your argument is with the NBA over the wording of their award. I made that very same case last week on air. I agree with you. Simmons is not a rookie. Rookies get paid. He got paid last year. It's a great argument. But that's not reality. Reality is that Ben Simmons is a rookie.
He's fantastic,
and
too,
now we're going to put Simmons up against Mitchell, and it doesn't come close.
Embiid in the Sixers
Magic,
going to the finals?
Magic Johnson part two. Magic Johnson part two. Look at his numbers this season. He's almost averaging a triple-double against Miami in his first ever playoff series. I don't know if they get there. I'd love to say they do, but at some point I think the youth might catch up to them. I just don't know who's going to get them.
Eagles, Nova, Sixers. Philadelphia burns down right there?
I'm telling you, it's one of the more exciting professional sports cities right now based on what they're trotting out. They had been garbage since pretty much 2010, when the Giants ended it for the Phillies. But now things are cooking there. They've got some excitement. The thing is, what right now would be the ultimate NBA Finals ratings booster? If you're Adam Silver and you could have your choice of any two teams that are active in the playoffs and everyone's still alive,
yeah,
who would you want in the finals for the ultimate ratings?
Warriors-Cavs.
You really think people would want the fourth installment of LeBron? Because I think there's some truth to that, but I don't know how far people are going to go with that.
LeBron James is the number one basketball story on the planet, not named the Golden State Warriors. That's, of course, the first ever met four times in a row NBA Finals. I think that would be huge. The 76ers are a great story. The process has been trusted and now is paying off some dividends. That is a young team on the come. If you cannot be the Golden State Warriors, I think you want to be the Philadelphia 76ers right now. But Mr. LeBron James is still the sun in the center of our solar system. His light and his heat warm the entire NBA. And there is nobody that people would tune in to watch either succeed or fail more than LeBron James.
It's a great point. It's a great point. I wouldn't say you're wrong. I wonder how many people, how many fringe fans would be interested in seeing this yet again. But you're right. By the time it would get to the finals, if he's able to put them on his back, that means he gets through Indiana, he goes through Toronto, maybe he ends up going through Philly. By that point, the hype is very real, but I'm wondering how many people would want to see another one of that. And you make an excellent point about the Sixers being on the come and everything else that's going on. I think that highlights the level of pressure that the Warriors are going to be facing to win this title, because take a look at the state of the NBA. Kawhi Leonard's probably going to get moved in the offseason. LeBron's going to be out there. Boogie's going to be out there. Chris Paul's going to be out there. Paul George is going to be out there. The Sixers are on the rise. The Jazz, the Nuggets, the T-Wolves are on the rise. The Rockets are still going to be legit. Boston's going to have Irving and Hayward back. They could make a play on Kyrie. The Sixers have the assets to trade for Kyrie. Everything that's out there right now, the NBA is going to be even nastier next season.
I agree.
Even nastier.
And if the Warriors are going to win another title this year, they're going to place even less value on next year's regular season, which they placed on this year's regular season, which was essentially valueless. They place no value on this regular season. That's going to be tough to turn around and sell in passion February meeting with the Grizzlies excitement next year. It really
is. We kick that around on the show. If they win the title this year, where do they finish seeding-wise at the end of the regular season in the Western Conference?
They're,
do you see them as top three?
They're comfortable three or four.
You still think they get there even if they just completely check out, which you know would happen during the regular season?
I still think they got roll out of bed and win 55 talent.
Oh, my God. I can't disagree. That's how insane this is to think that the Pelicans are going to be a serious threat.
By the way, what is the worst NBA Finals matchup? What would be the ultimate ratings disaster? Pelicans, Pacers?
I'm wondering what the factor is with Toronto. How many people care about a team that isn't even American?
Toronto, that would be a problem, too. I think you're right. But at least you'd still have that Eastern Seaboard tuning in.
And that's a major market. I don't know how that counts for ratings. Did you find it weird that Harden ranked ninth in jersey sales? Did you find that strange? Steph, again, dominates at one.
That still surprises me, though.
LeBron, two. Kevin Durant, three. We get it. But if Harden's the front runner for the MVP, he's on the team with the best record, he's in a major market, shouldn't he have a jersey that ranks higher than,
yes,
like ninth? He's behind Porzingis, for crying out loud.
Well, we know that there's one jersey hanging in a strip club. The rest of them, I don't know anything about. But it is surprising. It is surprising because it is his breakout year. But the reason why I'm really not surprised about Harden is the reason why I am surprised that Steph Curry and LeBron are still up. What is it, LeBron's 15th year? Steph Curry's ninth year. How do you not have one of their jerseys by now? If you wanted one, you would have had one by now, right?
It's the Brady factor. Brady's always got a high-selling jersey.
He's been
around forever.
Right, but the NBA, you know, they crank out all these alternate jerseys. The Brady phenomenon's amazing. It's like there's a home jersey, there's an away jersey, there's a color rush jersey that looks just like the home or away jersey. Have fun with that. At least there's seven different Steph Curry Warrior jerseys to go by. I guess you could make that argument for the Cavs. I guess you could make the argument that this year switching to Nike made everyone who wanted to be fashionable go out and get the up-to-date on the older player that you might have already had in your closet. I mean, everyone in Cleveland burned this guy's jersey at one point, so maybe you needed a new one. By the way, LeBron is right underneath Oladipo right there. You want to talk? Did Oladipo just get hurt? Oh, no, it's halftime. I'm sorry.
I was thinking the same thing.
I see Oladipo walking into the tunnel. I'm like, oh, no. Never mind. It's halftime. 57-40, Cavaliers up.
You know what part of the factor is with Harden, I think? And a couple people told me this on Twitter. Harden has no street ball cred in the sense that he's always trying to get fouled and get to the line. There's no style in that. You know, people, the thing with Steph, he knocks down the three. People like that. The thing with KD, everything about those guys' style of play, it translates. It translates to a wide variety of people. Harden's style of play where he's trying to get fouled, he's trying to get to the line, that doesn't translate over to a lot of the basketball community. I'm not sure if that's necessarily the case as to why his jersey ranks where it does, but a couple people weighed in with that, and I thought it was fascinating. It's right. Who gets behind that style of play, constantly finding your way to the line? We don't love free throws.
Let me ask you, if and obviously this would take the Warriors losing at some point here and not winning the NBA Finals, but if the Rockets went on to win the NBA Finals, would Harden's jersey shoot into the top three?
Top five. I don't know about top three. Top five for sure, though. He'd be up there.
He doesn't come across as likable either. Do you know what I mean? Like, Steph Curry just comes across as this really great, nice, likable guy. Like, I think everyone, kids, adults, all kind of are on board. Harden, I think you have to really love the game to want a Harden jersey.
There's not a mother on the planet who would be against buying their child a Steph Curry jersey, right? Like, you know you're not getting your child into trouble with that jersey. You knew back in the day if you bought your kid a Rodman jersey or a Rasheed Wallace jersey, there was probably an issue that would come from that.
Yeah, if your 7-year-old really wanted a Pacers Steven Jackson jersey, your 7-year-old's going to the strip club tonight.
Mom, can I have a Ron Artest jersey?
I think the global footprint, too, the Warriors have versus the Rockets. I'm sure there's going to be that factor as well.
Well, I'll tell you, the only other team, as far as the Far East goes, that is as popular, probably, as the Warriors and Lakers in China and Japan, is the Houston Rockets. Remember, Yao Ming opened up the East to them, and it's still, they're open for brisk business. The Rockets are huge internationally.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
That's all I do is make great points, Joe. It's good to have you here today. Thanks so much for coming on by. We have got so much to still get into. Our final hour is here. Rick Tittle's going to be by in about an hour from now for a little A's Sox pregame. That is coming up tonight. The Giants have called up Mack Williamson. There's a reason to pay attention to tonight. Jeff Samardzija makes his season debut tonight, and they're taking on the Ohtani sensation of Shohei Ohtani down in Anaheim of Los Angeles, of Anaheim of Southern California. Interesting, compelling, must-watch baseball, or is it too early in the year to you be sucked into a series with the Giants struggling for runs, even though Japanese Babe Ruth is waiting for them? Nah.
It'll be on, and I'll be probably more tuned into this than I have been the Arizona series, for sure. I'll give you that. The Ohtani thing fascinates
Arizona series, by the way. I almost slipped back into a stroke. That's how boring that was. Might have been the best stroke of the entire series for the Giants, dude. Anyone hit one out of the infield but Brandon Belt? It's nice to see him muscle one out. Two out.
Shohei Ohtani. Shohei, whatever.
Say hey?
Whatever. He's played for 2 weeks, all right? Put some time in, and then we'll all make sure we get it right.
Ohtani-san.
Ohtani, think about this. Ohtani is the most popular player on a team that has an individual in his prime who will eventually go down as a top five baseball player of all time. Mike Trout isn't even the most popular player on his own team anymore. That's what fascinates me. And I love Ohtani being with the Angels because it's going to draw more attention to Mike Trout. Trout is an all-timer.
Right.
An all-timer.
Right.
His trajectory is through the roof. When it's all said and done, he's going to be a top five baseball player
all time. This generation's Mickey Mantle.
Yes, exactly. And he's not even the story down there. Not even close to the story.
You know who's also starting to feel that? I don't matter like I used to. And look, he's been getting old in front of our eyes. Who knows how old he really is? Did you know that Albert Pujols was a Los Angeles Angel of Anaheim of Shohei Ohtani? I mean, it's amazing to see that Albert Pujols basically carries now the marquee swagger of Kelby Tomlinson.
Do you know he's an afterthought? Do you know how much is left on that deal as well? It's not as if the Angels are close to the end of that deal.
No, I heard there's only like 7 years and $322 million left on that
it's
deal.
It's an insane amount of money that's still left. I think reasonably it's 4 or 5 times 30. I mean, like $100 million is still sitting out there. He's not even close. I mean, you knew when that was signed it wasn't going to end up being a good deal. And that's why you're seeing baseball transition.
That's why the Cardinals didn't do it.
Yeah, exactly. That was, my God, I got to bring those numbers up because it'll blow your mind how much is still owed to Albert Pujols.
You know, somebody says here on the text line, you know, Mike Trout is as boring as Kawhi Leonard. See, I'm not going to agree or disagree with that. I couldn't even, if Mike Trout talked to me, called my cell phone right now and was like, "Hey, Damon, how you doing?" Be like, "Who is this?" I don't even know what Mike Trout sounds like.
That's a problem for Major League Baseball.
I couldn't spot Mike Trout's voice in a choir. I could. I who knows what he sounds like? I mean, to tell me the guy's boring when I don't have ever seen a microphone put in front of his face.
Precisely.
You know what's boring? Anaheim. That's what Mike Trout and his lack of verbal dexterity is not hurting Mike Trout. Anaheim's hurting Mike Trout. If Mike Trout were a New York Yankee, you'd hear a lot more about him.
That's why Harper's got to go there.
If Shohei Ohtani were a New York Yankee, forget it. There would be no other player discussed.
I'll say this. For as much heat as the Giants have taken this year, you do kind of have to throw out the idea that maybe it turned out to be a good thing Stanton didn't want to come here. He does not look like he likes the big stage. He's struggling in a big way in New York.
Oh, but this isn't the big stage.
What,
I mean, it's Major League Baseball, it's AT&T Park, and it's fantastic. But if you think the pressure at AT&T Park is tantamount to the pressure in the Bronx, you're crazy.
Agreed. But if he can't handle that, if that's too much for him and this is going to be an issue, think about how much you have invested in that dude over the next decade. Maybe, just maybe, the Giants sidestepped a potential problem there. Not because of the pressure, but because he just can't live up to the expectations. That stock was purchased at its absolute highest point.
Yes, it was.
I mean, he threatened 60 home runs. He hit 59 last year. You weren't going to acquire him and then get him to kick into another gear.
The right time to buy Bitcoin wasn't when it was trending on Twitter.
Here's the thing with Bitcoin. When I walked into the old office and everyone around me was asking me and talking to me about Bitcoin, you knew you weren't buying at that point.
When 95.7 The Game interns are discussing Bitcoin, that ship has sailed. Ship is sailed. It is gone. Have fun with it. We got to get to the other big news that came out yesterday. We have NFL schedules. Obviously, Raiders at the Niners, November 1st, a Thursday nighter. Are you happy with the placement of that game? I'm not.
I am. I did not want it anywhere near that Monday night doubleheader to open the season.
I'll agree with that.
Because that second half, now it's great that the Raiders are going to host the Rams. That's going to be a blast for Raider fans. From a national perspective, when the Niners and the Raiders meet, I want it to be on the big stage for everybody. That second half, Monday night doubleheader to open the year, the East Coast tunes out. It starts a little bit later. You get to a point where it's not as marquee because it's the start of the season. You have a million different things going on. Kids are going back to school, Labor Day weekend, all that. So I love the fact that it's not too early. I would have put it in December because I'm willing to gamble that both teams will be threatening
for the
playoffs.
We know you're willing to gamble.
I might be willing to step out there and make a wager from time to time. And looking at those two, I would say to myself, I think both will threaten for the playoffs. I want that game to mean something. I'd put it in December. But November's fine. I'm cool with it. Thursday night, that'll be, I've already scheduled the off day for the next day.
Carmageddon. I'm worried about everyone being in their seat in time, and that's the beauty of Levi's Stadium. I'm worried about the fact that the fans can't get all lubed up on a Sunday afternoon. Like, to me, this deserved a full day of tailgating, I had to cut out of work a little bit early, and I'm at an NFL game wearing a vest and a tie. Like, this game deserved wild atmosphere. I don't know if Thursday night in Santa Clara is going to get it a wild atmosphere. What I do like about this game is they're going to have their 2018 legs underneath them. They will have played some games. Both teams will have their identity. Gruden won't be new as far as returning. He will be in full, I'm back in coaching mode by then. Shanahan will be in them mode. I'm happy that it comes later in the season. I hate that it's a Thursday night game.
Where would you put it? Sunday night or Monday night?
How about this? A Sunday afternoon or a Sunday night game would have been great, or a Monday nighter on its own. But the thing is, it's, you know, when you build your stadium in an office park, Monday and Thursday night games automatically suck for you, period.
Fair point. I would say that at the very least, while that's going to be enjoyable, looking at the Raiders' schedule, I think it's that Pittsburgh Sunday night game that stands out more than anything.
Yeah,
else.
Yeah, absolutely.
You look at that game, you're thinking Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell coming into the Collie. You know what? The NFL, the Raiders have taken a beating on these schedules, and Raider fans take it worse than anyone because they give up that home game for the international game every single year.
Well, they're about to give up 16 home games a year when they move to Vegas.
The Vegas community has supported that hockey team like none other, but that is going to be everyone's destination for the one road game.
That's theirs. The Vegas Golden Knights have so beaten the Raiders to the marketplace that the Raiders will not be able to play that. We're the first team you can ever root for collectively. No, that ship has sailed. First it was UNLV. Now it's the hockey team. The hockey team is a local culture. It'll never be a national obsession. You got dudes right now in Green Bay thinking about the ultimate bro-down weekend in Vegas in the middle of winter. We're going to go. That place is going to be 30% home crowd fans, period. It's
the new San Diego. It's the new San Diego. When I was in San Diego, when I was living there, I had season tickets, and I remember the first game of the season. And this, interestingly enough, this was when Lowe was playing for them. The first game of the season was the Cowboys. 60% of the stadium was the Cowboys. The Giants came in that year. The Steelers came in that year. Everybody came in and took over Qualcomm. Everybody. Raider fans know this. You go down there, you take over the stadium.
Now they get to take over an MLS stadium.
That's what, exactly. But that's what Vegas is going to be. You can have the community turn up for you, but when it's 60, 65,000 seats, everybody is going to circle that as the road trip. Philadelphia, New York, New England, everywhere in the country is going to have that vacation. as their vacation trip.
Yep. The Raiders showed up dead on arrival week 17 last year in with the StubHub Center or wherever they play, Carson, whatever. And Raider fans took that thing over. Now, it didn't matter. They still lost 30-10, but it was unbelievable. I mean, Raider fans are known for taking over Charger games. This last year was comical. I'm wondering, you know, because I'm looking at the one thing that jumps out to me about the Niners schedule, too, the first four games, three are on the road, but it's really 2.5 are on the road because you're at Minnesota versus Detroit. At Kansas City, by the way, you are going to two of the hardest places to win in your first three games, Niner fans. Then you go at the Los Angeles Chargers. That could be a borderline home game for Niner fans.
If you're going to get the Chiefs, do you want them earlier in the year when Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback, hasn't necessarily settled into the role yet? Or do you want them later in the year when you have more tape to study Patrick Mahomes?
I don't fear facing him at any point in time. Not yet. Not yet. Do you?
Well, I mean, for the sake of the conversation, it was basically pick early or late, so not fearing him at all. He's got a big arm.
He's
got
a big arm.
I mean, they have done nothing.
So did Jeff George. I wasn't afraid.
Jeff George. Oh, my God, that's going back. Remember him on the cover of Sports Illustrated and everything else? That was back when the mustache never even looked good then.
No.
I mean, even then it didn't look good.
No,
Tom Selleck, and I'm not sure, but Tom Selleck makes it work. That's and the guy from Tombstone, the oldest brother.
The oldest brother.
Wyatt Earp's oldest brother, the gray. He's got the great voice. I think he does the Coors commercials. I think his name's Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
That's a guy who makes the mustache work. Selleck makes it work. Jeff George. No, sorry. The combination mullet mustache, it should have known the guy wasn't going to work in the NFL. Should have known. It was there.
Can I get a Burt Reynolds?
Well, yeah.
Prime time.
No question.
Mustache.
Gator.
As black as the Trans Am he was driving.
Whoa, must
he
be Burt Reynolds
the standard.
Or something.
Right? It was good. Nice stash. Let's be totally honest. Hey, you know what? Here's what is really, really nice. On the text line, which can be a bear to please at times, Monday through Thursday. You think? People really, really enjoy our Fortenbaugh Friday phenomenon. We continue to bring it to you because it is, how about this? This is the best show you keep asking for but are never going to get.
I've thought about that. I've wondered if we'd put together a podcast.
Sounds like too much work.
I'm with you, Joe. It's getting this one.
Right. Once a week, and it doesn't even have to deal with sports, we can serve as therapists for the Bay Area.
Can we
People
do it high?
Come to us.
Well, do however you want, Damon.
How else are we going to do it?
By the way, speaking of great mustaches, can we talk about who's sitting in with you next week?
Oh.
Ray Ratto.
Absolutely.
You like mustaches? You like tight sweaters? Have you got a co-host next week?
Here's where this gets really interesting. Ratto's in for Lowe all next week. So
they're basically the same guy. When our program
present
director
the image
said
that they could have played fullback at some point.
Program director came could in have. And said, "Hey, do you think you can go ahead and promote Ratto on the morning show next week?" And I said, "What? What? Don't even say that he's filling in for Lowe. He's going to be the same guy. No one will even notice."
So tune in.
Do you know Ratto and I have literally only said maybe 14 words to each other?
Yeah.
And not because there's any sort of rivalry. We barely ever met. He was in here doing some shows a few weeks ago. And in passing, I was still hanging out doing some work. So when the shows ended, we kind of talked for
ships
a couple minutes.
Ships passing in the night.
That's it. Like, we're rolling into a week of shows. We've got the playoffs. We've got the NFL draft. We've got all that next week. We don't even know each other.
Well, you
so
know
that
what?
Could be chaos. I'm very excited about it.
I still think you're going to make it work, and you're going to have more instant chemistry than another show in the sports world that is launched to almost zero fanfare, the worst idea ESPN has had in a long time. And by the way, that's really saying something these days. Next, here on a little Fortinbaugh Friday.
Woo! Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
From the PenskeAutoSales.com text line, hey, Damon, I enjoy Joe Fortinbaugh with you on Fridays. Well, so do we. That's why he's nice enough to keep on coming in and hanging out with us on a little Fortinbaugh Friday. We got Joe, Gianna, as always, Albie Bouton-Vixon. Food poisoning? How you doing? You okay?
I bought her Brussels sprouts at a rotisserie chicken thing, and she's got a tummy ache now.
Way to give her the bunk Brussels sprouts.
I had it too. I'm all right.
Who gets sick from vegetables?
Yeah, let's not make
that whole thing that's kind of counterproductive, isn't it? Right. I thought you ate vegetables to be healthy.
We don't want to talk about things that are going to make her feel funny in there. So we're just going to move on. Look at it this way.
Or do we want to do that for 30 minutes?
No.
Let's get her to a little 420. Let's rest that tummy. So, ever make a $15+ million investment, Joe, and have automatic buyer's remorse or regrets?
No, but
me neither.
Give me $15 million and I'm sure I can answer yes.
All I can tell you right now is that if you spend $15 million on a show and your debut episode draws 283,000 viewers, you have a serious problem if your channel is ESPN and your time slot is the mornings. It's not like this is a new show that is being launched on a station you never heard of and you need to find out it's channel number 264 on your DirecTV. Everyone knows where ESPN is. Everyone knows they go to that and watch it in the morning, and now no one is watching it in the morning. From SportsIllustrated.com, ESPN's new morning show, Get Up, closed out its third week on the air today. Now, 3 weeks is still not enough time to fully judge a show. I mean, Joe, we gave you longer than 3 weeks, right? But when it comes time for ratings, the news is getting worse for Mike Greenberg, Michelle Beadle, and Jalen Rose. Their debut episode drew 283,000 viewers. Tuesday's episode drew 233,000 viewers. Wednesday pulled 243,000 viewers. This show is not picking up viewers. Expected with the NBA playoffs going on and Jalen Rose and Michelle Beadle promoting their show constantly in NBA pregame still means nothing to anyone. The other problem for the worldwide leader is the show has no momentum, no buzz. As bad as shows like Undisputed and First Take are, hey, people are at least talking about them. Even if they're mocking them, it's still talking about them. The savages on the social media, they're not even making fun of Get Up. It's just there, writes this piece in Sports Illustrated. Is Get Up's problem that the people don't like the format or that they don't like the hosts? ESPN better find out the answer sooner rather than later, because the hosts are making a combined $14.5 million. And needless to say, they could have spent a lot less money than that and had this type of success or failure, if you look at it like that. Now, just to give you an idea of what a colossal failure of 200,000 plus viewers on ESPN is, at any point in time during afternoon drive in our broadcasting radius of like 75 miles, we got about 130,000 people to 150,000 people listening. And that is our local radio show. They're not even doubling our audience backed by ESPN television
nationally.
And I'm going to tell you this right now. You probably won't believe it. me, Joe, Gianna, we are all coming to you for much less than $14.5 million combined. Well, I don't know about Joe. Maybe Joe.
Yeah. And I resent the implication that you're only doing 130,000. Foreign Ball Fridays, at least a million.
Probably. I mean, if it includes streaming,
yeah,
sure.
here's the problem. What's the format? What's the hook? What are they doing differently? There are two things that work. Actually, there's only one thing that works, and then there's one thing that's tried and true. Right now, we live in the hot take debate era. Whether you like it or not, that's what sells. Okay? Pardon the Interruption got it started. And they did it in a classy, sophisticated sort of way.
Fun.
Then it devolved from there. You had Around the Horn, which was nice. And then it got into the screaming match right. That is First Take, and everything's gone
hot
from there.
Hot take's not enough. It's got to be even hotter.
Exactly. And that is what sports is now. So you put that out there, and you've got something. Because that's what the market wants. Sadly, that's what they want. If you're not going to do that, just go back to the days of Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann and give
highlight.
Us a sports show. Just give me the sports. Because in the morning, you're getting the kids ready. You're having your coffee. You're putting on your tie. You got a million things going on. That in the background, I just like hearing Stuart Scott,
you're
Dan
listening,
Patrick,
yeah.
Right? I'm consuming without having to pay attention. This show's on. I don't even know what this is. First of all, Mike Greenberg has about as much edge as a bowl of pudding, right? I mean, what's he going to say
vanilla
that's going to get me to react in any way, shape, or form? I like Jalen Rose a lot.
I do, too.
Just not in this format. And as far as Beatles concerned, I mean, I've been watching her on TV for years. I'm really not sure how this role, if this is the best utilization of Michelle Beadle, but this combination together, Greenberg has no place on this show.
No.
There's nothing he's going to say.
I don't understand the Michelle Beadle phenomenon. I mean, there is no Michelle Beadle phenomenon. She was nothing more than the girl on the channel we were watching in the first place. She left Colin Cowherd in that afternoon show that they were doing. She goes to NBC Sports, and they got her as an entertainment reporter within 3 months, pulling her off assignments because it's not working. No one's watching. She comes back to ESPN and gets these marquee, huge jobs again, and there's nothing there. I mean, I know she tries really, really hard to be that, aren't I the cool girl next door who likes fart jokes and wrestling and all that stuff, and I just don't think it plays anymore.
The word is, and I don't know if there's a lot of truth to this, but the word is she works very well with the individuals she's assigned with. There's a certain dynamic that takes place when you work with former athletes or you're in a male-dominated industry.
Gets along well with them.
She supposedly works extraordinarily well with everyone she's around. I think that's why they like her, because she's got that versatility. She's got that personality. Conversely, that's part of the reason, according to the reports, why Sage Steele was yanked off of that show. She did not get along with everyone else. Famously, her and Bill Simmons just hated each other.
Well, Bill Simmons is terrible on TV. He's proven that to the point where HBO said, here's $7 million a year. Go produce an Andre the Giant documentary, which was phenomenal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Bill Simmons is the producer on HBO. By the way, I got a quick tangent, quick side street here. We'll get
it's
back.
Your show.
Get me back on.
It's like you're looking at me. It's like, it's your show. Do it.
It's our show. There are three. There are three absolutely phenomenal documentaries that are all playing on HBO right now. Andre the Giant, The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling.
Yes.
Phenomenal. If you're a Gary Shandling fan, you have to see it. And the new Elvis documentary called Elvis the Searcher. It comes in two parts. You might not have known this. Elvis was a big deal.
I've heard.
I mean, there's Elvis. If I say Elvis, I'm saying the vast majority of us, certainly those in our age group, look at him nothing more as the fat, mocking Vegas white jumpsuit Elvis, like the parody of Elvis, the
right.
Elvis impersonator. Elvis Presley, the happening in real time phenomenon, paralyzed the United States of America. As much as war does, as much as famine does, as much as any topic that would be a nationwide topic, Elvis Presley ground every family to a screeching halt when he came on TV or the radio. It was unbelievable what a different time it was. It's phenomenal stuff. Like, I never appreciated Elvis until I watched this documentary. Check it out.
In terms of first names, there's Elvis, there's Oprah. Is there anything else?
Madonna.
That's not actually her name, though, right?
Yeah, it is.
Her name's actually Madonna?
Madonna Sassoni.
I mean, yeah, I didn't
she
know
was
that.
Huge
it
for
might
pop
be her middle
music.
Name.
No.
Yeah,
I'm not saying she's not
Cher.
Not saying she's not huge, but just the whole if you say Elvis, there might be one guy that thinks Gerback.
Right, right. Some angry Chiefs fan.
Yeah, Madonna.
Gerback. Damn it! Like a Michigan fan from way back in the day. But I mean, my favorite Elvis story is when he was in Nashville, and you knew he liked to eat, right? He would be hammered at night. And he would get all of his friends, and they'd jump on a private plane at night, and they'd fly to Denver for one thing. They wouldn't just make these themselves. They would go to Denver because there was this sandwich shop or restaurant in Denver that made a sandwich where—
Is it an Ike's?
It was it's not an Ike's. You can see if you can get this on the menu. It's a loaf of bread. It would be hollowed out, and it would be one jar of peanut butter, one jar of jelly, and then 1 pound of bacon. And they would cut it into slices, and that's how they would serve it. Elvis would fly out there, buy two, eat one entire one himself on the flight back, and then have another one the next day.
That's baller.
It was like peanut butter, banana, and bacon?
I think it was just peanut butter, an entire jar of peanut butter, an entire jar of jelly, a pound of bacon inside a hollowed out loaf of bread. And they would do that and cut it into slices and sell the slices. Elvis would eat the entire thing.
Got it.
And then, you know, shockingly, died on the toilet.
Another Elvis option, Elvis Costello.
Yeah, okay. That's right. A good one. That so Elvis Costello, Doomerville, Presley, and Gerback.
Andrus.
Andrus.
Yes.
I'm going to go with Gerback.
Yeah, it sounds good to me. Let's get back to why it is Michelle Beadle and Sage Steele.
Oh, yeah,
I'll tell you what brought down Sage Steele. Sage Steele tweeted about the protest at LAX when the whole Black Lives Matter thing, she was inconvenienced. When that was all taking off in its infancy, there was this huge protest at LAX. Sage Steele, Hoosier, by the way, I'm a fan. She goes ahead and tweets like, what's the point of shutting down this airport? I need to get to my next NBA game. And like, it did not go well for her on social media. Robert Latall, Black Sports Online. She lost the culture. She was classified as unwoke. And that was pretty much the end of her.
She got into it with Meeko Grimes as well.
She did.
That got really nasty on social
media.
Did.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, you do not want to get into it with Meeko Grimes on social media because she's going to go to the gutter fast.
People have been waiting for a long time for you and I to go at it. It's something that people are very excited about one day when you and I really, truly dig in and get into it. And we could we both know we can hold our own. I want nothing to do with Meeko Grimes.
No,
that's a pass.
That's
a hard pass right there.
There is no winning.
No.
Battling Meeko Grimes. There's no way to win that battle.
There's only crying and shame. Like
for sure.
Ace Ventura in the shower, naked, after he finds out about Einhorn and Finkel.
The crying game. All right. So it's funny. We were just ripping Get Up. Adam Silver appeared on Get Up this morning. I'm going to have to tell you about it because you weren't watching. So Darren Rovell had to tweet about it for me to even know that this was said. And when this gets said in a public space, it makes me want to hang my head and cry because this is the single worst example. There are wonderful examples. Examples where you could prove that eliminating the one and done would be the right thing for all involved. There's an argument to be had in both directions. What's fair? What's foul? What's good for the kid? What's good for the NBA? It's a fascinating topic that we're not going to explore largely right now. But we do have this from Adam Silver on Get Up talking about players, the future, they got to be 19 years old or 1 year removed from their high school to be draft eligible. Quote, Mark Zuckerberg dropped out of school. Bill Gates did too. And nobody told them they had to go to school at 18 years old. They're outliers. They are not.
That's not the norm. Huh?
That is not the norm. That is not the standard bearer. That is not the best example to give when really the best way to sum this up is, well, you know, people who leave their educational moments usually end up regretting that later in life more than they embrace the billions of dollars that they became because they happened to invent a new medium like these two guys did. Saying that this kid should be able to go to the NBA because Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg were successful is about as intellectually devoid of substance as you can possibly get.
Also, had Zuckerberg come up, created, been inspired by, however you want to phrase it, had the idea for Facebook prior to going to Harvard, he would have had the ability to pursue that dream. You don't allow these kids to pursue that NBA dream. You create a road barrier. Zuckerberg didn't have a road barrier. None of these guys had the barrier. They just weren't inspired to do what they did until they went to college. And I don't think the reason you want these kids going to college is because you want them inspired in some way, shape, or form. It's a fascinating problem to have. I do like the angle that you're seeing. I can't remember the kid's name, but he was a top 10 recruit who was supposed to go to Syracuse, and he pulled out, and he said, I'm going to the G League. I'm going to go play in the G League.
Yeah.
I'm going to go spend a year in the G League, and I'm going to figure it out there. I'm going to play amongst pros. I'm going to travel, and that's what I'm going to do. Rather than go to Italy, rather than go to anywhere else in Europe to play basketball, to circumvent the rule, rather than go to Syracuse, I'm going to go to the G League, and I'm interested to see if more guys follow suit there because they're going to have to worry about their rules. The problem with going to the G League is those teams, the parent teams, don't own the rights to that player necessarily until a year down the road when right. you would be entering the draft. So you don't have an incentive to necessarily play this kid and develop this kid like other G Leaguers. That's going to be a story worth watching.
Well, do you know why this story by that I saw retweeted by Darren Rovell, Adam Silver, is so intellectually dishonest? It's because both of these guys did a year in college before they dropped out. Both these guys went to college. They didn't graduate. But they did their freshman years. That's all we're asking. Is there anybody working on this get-up show for $14.5 million? Is there not a single producer in Mike Golick's ear, Michelle Beadle, or Jalen Rose's ear going, actually, both those guys went to college. You might want to challenge him on that.
That's a great point.
I saw the Social Network. I saw the Social Network. I haven't seen the Bill Gates movie, but I saw the Social Network. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. By the way, I have to address this just because sometimes you got to smack a fool around to get a point across. Text line says, Elvis really paralyzed the country? Damon, you're turning your show into a culturally biased show. Shaking my head. I don't even have to ask how old you are. You're so young and stupid. It comes right through in your text.
He's standing right now, by the way.
Let me tell you that Elvis singing music that was determined black music. As there were stop mixing the races rallies happening all over America, Elvis shook racial identity in America in the late 50s to its core. To its core. Like, you think Kendrick Lamar is a big deal because he won a Nobel Prize or Pulitzer or whatever it was? Stop it. Stop it. Elvis sold a record to every living, breathing human in the United States. How many bought that Elvis record? Oh, everyone? Sold? Elvis was a bigger deal than you could ever imagine. And if you go ahead and you watch that documentary, you'll be texting me an apology come Monday. I mean, it's staggering. It's staggering Elvis's influence on what was called race mixing back in the 50s.
Did you know a lot about Elvis prior to watching this documentary?
No, most of my Elvis knowledge was, mocking him culturally. The fat Elvis on a toilet eating right. peanut butter, bacon, jelly sandwiches like you're talking about.
Pretty much the analysis I brought to the table about 5 minutes
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, yeah. It was Elvis, fat Elvis, fat Elvis stamp. Like, I remember that happened in my lifetime. Elvis became a stamp and they're going to go young Elvis or fat Elvis. America voted fat Elvis.
Quietly, one of the coolest under the radar aspects of Las Vegas used to be Fat Elvis at Harrah's. It was always a free show in the lounge. It would be at like 4:30. Fat Elvis, he would say
AM, PM.
PM.
Okay.
He wouldn't get any marquee slots, and you never had to pay for it. And Harrah's is kind of right on the strip.
Yeah.
So you can drift right in and drift right out. It's not like some of the gaudy places where you have the long approach to go in, all the work to get into the Venetian or to get into the Mirage or Bellagio.
You get lost on the way.
Harrah's is right there. You would stumble right in, you would catch Fat Elvis doing his thing, and you would move right out. So much so he inspired a donut called the Fat Elvis.
Nice. Very nice.
Although that may have been the actual Elvis that inspired that donut, but, neither here nor there at the moment.
My single biggest Vegas I miss it is the Imperial Palace.
Oh, my God.
I love the IP. The IP was so dirty, downtrodden,
so low
scummy.
Class.
It was awful.
So off-brand
for you. It
was
sad. But you know what? They had the best sports prop bets before season started. They had like the initial baseball over unders, and it seemed like they had a better book before books became a thing in Vegas.
The IP.
I miss the IP.
I had some good times there. I first bottle it. Like every time I ever had Dom, Dom Perignon was at.
Yeah, we knew it. Yeah, thank you very much.
And people like, if it's for the audience or people listening, I don't know.
Slept with a fat Italian guy named Dom.
First time I ever had that champagne was at Imperial Palace.
What were you celebrating?
I wasn't celebrating anything when someone sent us a bottle to a table and was with a bunch of girlfriends. So,
see,
I didn't know they carried Dom at the IP.
Yeah, I'm surprised it was available.
They do. And
are you sure it was
cool.
Dom? How young were you? And
I saw the bottle.
It was Dan Perignon.
God.
Wow, look at us. You put that on Instagram, but it didn't exist then.
They sent us over the nicest bottle of Dan Dibley you've ever seen. By the way, we got some shout-outs here saying that, Damon, the Westward Ho used to have a solid 99-cent shrimp cocktail. Did Joe's just nodding.
I've heard the stories of that. I mean, you can go back in the day. The Flamingo is still holding it down. Shout out to Flamingo. It's still holding it down with a lot of that Bugsy Siegel appeal. They are trying, the young generation to ruin it by turning it into like this new hipster hangout. Get out of the Bird. Get out of the Bird. That's what we call it, the Bird. You don't go to the Bird. Go do your thing at Mandalay Bay. Go do your thing at the Cosmo. They're beautiful places. They're designed for you. The Bird is for the old school. You walk in there, you immediately feel like you have smoked a pack and a half of cigarettes.
Yeah.
It is just Vegas.
If you go down to Dre's.
I mean, that's close. It's on the same side of the street. You can really knock off Flamingo, Harrah's, Wild Bill's, Gambling Saloon when that was back in play, which is now Dre's, I believe.
Wait, Dre's isn't the club in the bottom of the Flaming O? I always used to call it the Flaming O.
No, that used to be there, and now Dre's is it's like Wild Bill's was converted into this.
Oh, it's
a
like
whole
its
new
own
thing now.
Brand. It's they took it out of the casino.
It's
it stands on its own now.
Popular now amongst right. It's quite lit, from what I understand. Quite lit,
as the kids say.
It's lit, fam. Nice.
Jeez.
Nice. Well, I'm really happy that we sorted all this out. We had a plan. The show did not meet that plan, but I still feel like it was a successful plan. And look, there's a lot of things that people plan today. 420 happened, and it didn't exactly go according to plan. I've got one more thing to talk about here. Joe, you're going to stay till 6:15 tonight?
Yeah, I'm going overtime.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'm going to go overtime.
OT. Here.
I appreciate that. Then maybe we'll save this for 6 o'clock. Did you see what Anthony Rizzo said, that baseball needs to have a shorter season?
Love it. We're going to get into that?
You love it.
I love the fact that we're going to get into it.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to go ahead and let you know my position right now.
I never, ever, ever like less sports. To me, that's never the answer. That's never the answer to solve any league's problem.
Let's have less sex. Let's drink less alcohol.
Yeah, we need fewer games. Let's smoke less weed on a 420. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that something that we all agree on is enjoyable and why we're here, we'd want less of. He thinks he's got a point about, like, just calendar, not cooperating with baseball schedules. He might. But whenever you got a guy who lives a life of opulence that we couldn't even relate to, talking about how he wants to work less, it just rubs me the wrong way every single time. It really, really does. We've got an awful lot more coming up in just 15 minutes of radio. We will do that for you. We will deliver it to you. We have not gone over this one topic about Rizzo yet with Joe, so we're going to do that. We are going to sprinkle in a couple of final thoughts on how this series with the Warriors is probably going to be over by the end of the weekend, and what it means if it really is the Pelicans waiting for them in the next round. It looks like that's where we're going. Do you want to be there? The answer is yeah. Bring that bad boy on. And we're waiting to hop on that Sharks bandwagon again. Sharks and Knight still TBD. Have no idea.
That's fine.
Maybe Wednesday that series gets underway. I'm looking forward to it.
Is going
to
be nasty.
Back on that bandwagon.
A nasty series right there between those two. Both are cooking right now.
It's going to be good hockey. It's going to be good playoff hockey. We've got one more segment left. We will make it worth your time. Stay right here on a 420, a little Fortinbaugh Friday on the Damon Bruce Show.
DGDG.com studios on the corner of Broadway and Battery. This is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
Welcome. We got a TV on here in the studio. KTVU is focusing on the Hippie Hill, Golden Gate Park, 420 celebration. You would think it was a little foggy in San Francisco today based on that cloud coverage of the field. But they pull back, and what do you know? It's a sunny day. How about that? Must be something else in the atmosphere, in the air. Welcome. It's great to have you here. We got Cleveland 73, Indiana Pacers 69. They're back in this game. Cleveland was running away early. It's great to have you back here. We're going to send you out to a little Rick Tittle. Actually, we're not sending you out. He's coming on in. Rick Tittle's going to get you ready for a little A's Sox. Or no, maybe he is over at the Coliseum tonight.
Probably
is he at the
treehouse.
Oh, is he here? Okay, so we will talk to Rick on our way out. Joe Fortenbaugh is hanging out with us a little overtime on a Fortenbaugh Friday. We appreciate that, as always. We are going to talk a little bit about Anthony Rizzo here, a little bit more on Sharks versus Knights. Couple final thoughts on Warriors Pelicans. We can see that coming. But real quick, Gianna's got an important announcement. I do not want to leave you out. What is it?
All right. So we did this fun giveaway. We have a brand new 95.7 The Game t-shirt. So if you went to our Instagram today, you saw the video. You had a video. You had a chance to win. I just want to announce the winners, Mr. Trujillo 510 and Matt Stagram. We will be sending you your new 95.7 The Game Dubs inspired t-shirts.
Nice.
Today.
Nice.
Yeah. So, hey, follow us on Instagram, on the socials. You have other opportunities of winning fun stuff.
I heard you put this show on the gram. I'm not on the gram, but you have put the show on the gram?
I've officially put the show on the gram. So, at Damon Bruce.
Joe, if you were on the gram when I was a kid, that meant you had cocaine in your pocket. That's what I'm sorry.
Yes, I saw you going there.
Is that an appropriate 420 joke, or is that a little bit too much of a controlled substance for 420 humor?
Not on Instagram. Is that so? Is that one step too far for social media for you?
Yeah, Facebook was enough, and I regret it. Twitter is something that I have to be on, just deal with, but the gram is enough. Like, I don't need any IG models. I don't need any of that.
But all your cooking, all the famous, all the beautiful meals you put together.
I'm not a big photograph my dinner kind of guy.
A humble guy. A humble Damon Bruce.
Here's the thing. I get to shake my booty in public for 4 hours a day. I don't need people, that's enough for me.
Okay.
That's why I'm here, Joe. This is why this works for Damon and I.
Yeah, have you met
I got this. I got
just,
this.
To just round all this out.
Have you met my publicist, my event coordinator, my social media consultant,
and chisel David out of it?
Yes.
Real quick, hey Damon, don't you want to talk about Elvis stealing black people's music? Look, that's the topic you wanted to talk about. Yes, he did that. This document covers it vividly. If you want cultural misappropriation, you get some in this. But that's not what I was talking about. I was talking about relevance in the culture, what he did, the conversation, the time. Please watch the documentary. I've got one guy saying, I got a doc for you. Will you watch with an open mind or continue and think you know it all?
How often do you get into it with the text line?
Too often. I have to take it down.
He does. He has to shut it down. Gets a little distracting.
Well, many people will tell you, they'll say, don't have the text line on. Don't look at it. It's not good for anyone. It can be dreck at times. It's kind of like getting on the social media because we operate in these echo chambers. First and foremost, the other night when Ali LaForce asked LeBron James about the Greg Popovich thing, social media erupted into a fight. And you ask yourself, truly, honestly, how many people honestly cared about what happened there? How many people even cared about that interview, cared about the question, cared about the answer? How many truly cared? Because we follow the people we choose to follow. It's a lot of media people. Everyone's screaming and yelling, but that's not indicative of the rest of the country. A lot of people, they didn't even watch it. They don't care.
It's outrage du jour. Outrage du jour. What do you want to be angry about today? And good luck, because tomorrow morning you'll be angry about something else and you'll have forgotten about this. The people that, what was her name?
Ali LaForce.
Yeah. The people that crucified her only for LeBron to put out a video saying, like, no, she totally cleared it with me before they came to the interview. You're all douchebags. Is phenomenal. Like, I'm glad that he came and defended her. And if I were her, my Twitter account would have just, it would have been a middle finger. Just one middle finger. With a big, lovely ring on it, because I bet you she gets paid well. She's got network.
Or it, you know, could have been your Instagram account.
I could have grammed it. Could have put it on that gram. Put it on the gram. All right. Damon, what do you think about Snapchat? Yeah, I'm about to delete it from my phone. It's terrible.
So you're on that, though?
I was on that.
That's for, like, teenagers.
Yeah, it's just not me.
Why you need to be on the gram?
You know what? I saw it, and then I really hated the reboot. They redesigned it. They gave it an update.
Yeah.
Look at me. Me and Kendall Jenner agree on one thing. Snapchat's dead. Snapchat's dead. Devalue it by $1 billion by one tweet, Kendall. Do your thing, girl.
The same day Kendall Jenner comes out and says she's off Snapchat is the same day Damon Bruce says it drops by $1 billion. Who had the bigger effect?
Yeah.
So, of course, Damon.
Did you hear what Damon Bruce said about
who moves that needle? Get up, ESPN. So let's real quick go over all the stories before we get out of Rick's way and let him do a little baseball pregame. We got A's Red Sox coming up tonight. San Jose Sharks, Vegas Knights.
Done scoring.
Still don't know when game one's going to be, but it's going to be an unbelievable series that I hope the Sharks end up taking. And then I hope they also send that same middle finger picture right to the Oakland Raiders, who have already wished the Golden Knights good luck this playoff hockey season. You want to talk about forgetting where you're from? And if you want to talk about pissing off the streets, forgetting where you're from is the number one way to make those streets angry at you. And the Raiders are doing it before they even kick off their last 2-3 years of football in this town.
It's like putting a like on a girl's Facebook page, like before you've broken up
on the gram,
previous girlfriend or the gram. Yeah, you see it and you understand those are going to be your comrades down in Las Vegas, but you're not in Las Vegas yet. You're not there yet. The Sharks are still family.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, whether you hate being here or not, whatever it may be, you got to tolerate. Just like everyone's got to tolerate what's coming out of there. That's how it's got to be. Your fans are tolerating the fact that you're leaving because they continue to show up for your games. But you can't just double barrel the Bay Area and then expect everyone to turn around and be like, all right, you know, we'll come out, we'll support, you know, publicly we'll all get behind. No, it's a mistake. It's regrettable. But now you've really added a little hot sauce to this whole thing because you got Kyle Shanahan opening the door down in San Jose. They get the sweep. The Knights get the sweep. You got stations, casinos giving out free bets to their boarding pass members on the Golden Knights. Honestly, and I hate to bring it up in this context because I know we're pro Sharks here, but the Knights story is one of the best stories in sports this year.
It's the greatest story in the history of expansion stories.
I mean, they didn't exist last year, and they just destroyed the Los Angeles Kings. The Kings didn't have a prayer in that series. I mean, you didn't exist, and now all of a sudden you sweep your way into the second round. This is going to be a series. If you have not been watching hockey all year, don't feel bad. A lot of people are like that.
That's fine.
Get on the train now, though.
Absolutely.
Get on the train for this series.
Get on it. And Martin Jones, keep standing on your head, buddy. He's been unbelievable so far in the pipes for the Sharks. We've got a series that I think does wrap up in four. Your prediction, I think, will come true. My fear that Warriors Spurs might go six. Unfounded fears. I throw myself on the mercy of a Fortinbaugh Friday here. You did call sweep. It looks like that's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. Warriors, Pelicans, next round. One thing you're not worried about, one thing you are worried about.
For game four or for the future?
No. Game one, Warriors-Pelicans next round.
Warriors-Pelicans. Okay. One thing I'm worried about would be the fact that the Pelicans appear to be the three-point buster. What I mean by that is in the first round, I had this number a couple days ago. I haven't updated it. But through the first 13 games of the playoffs, the team that had knocked down more threes in the game had won 11. 11 games. The team that hit more three-pointers of 13, that team went on to win. The only two it didn't, the Pelicans.
Really?
And then the Pelicans again.
Nah,
when they
yay.
Tied the Blazers. They have been somewhat immune to that. Now, relatively small sample size, and we did see what happened at the end of the season when the Curry-less Warriors took on the Pelicans. There's a bit of a concern there. Gentry knows the team. He's got the team moving in the right direction. They're one of those, and I don't necessarily believe in this, but one of those momentum teams.
Yep.
So there's a bit of concern there. One thing, though, on the positive side, we sit here and we go, man, how are you going to match up with Antonio Davis? How are you going to match up with Drew Holiday? He and Rajon Rondo, in terms of the defensive backcourt, have been dynamite so far. That's not what I'm worried about. The Pelicans have to figure out how they're going to match up with the Warriors. And at the end of the day, that's why I sleep easy at night, because they have to figure us out, not the other way around.
Warriors, Pelicans, 5-6, we give the Pelicans 2 games based on the way they're playing in this.
The Curry factor's huge. The Curry factor's huge. But right now,
I mean, five max? Someone I know it said, sounds a bit arrogant, but why am I going to pick against them?
How about this? Imagine if Boogie was there, says the text line. I don't even know if the Pelicans are in the playoffs if I'm imagining Boogie there. They got better without him.
Every team gets better
without Boogie Cousins.
They picked him up last year, and everyone said, look at how ferocious this is going to be. And they never made a push for the playoffs. They got worse. He went down. The team got better. That's just how it is. It's addition by subtraction. Cousins is a freak talent, but for some reason, it doesn't work from a team aspect.
NFL released its schedules, obviously. We got a schedule that has the Raiders and 49ers meeting November 1st at Levi's Stadium. That's going to be a Thursday nighter. It's going to be our Bay Area Super Bowl. It's going to be the last real battle of the Bay at its least in driving distance of these two franchises. I don't like they don't play the Seahawks until week 13. I don't like they play the Seahawks in 2 out of 3 weeks. But it's good to see an NFL schedule, and it'll be better to see the NFL back on our radar. It'll be here before you know it. Things move fast. Joe, thank you very much. Great to see you as always. We enjoy this tremendously.
Yes, we do.
Gianna and I is the fastest radio of the entire week.
I can't think of two people I would rather have spent 420 with than you two.
Take that, Joe and or Dan and Lowe.
Why you got to turn it into a problem?
No, I'm sorry. No, I didn't mean to do that at all.
Get your game on.
Like, what's wrong with this guy? You come in. Yes, it's. I'm so happy to take.
We're gonna play on and stand strong with
Joe Low and Dan.
Ass.
Thank you very much. Good to see you. Thank you to Albie. Thank you very much, Monica. Thank you, Elena. We hope your belly's feeling a little bit better. How you doing?
Thumbs up. Thumbs up.
Rick Tittle coming up next with a little A's pregame dugout show. In the meantime, thanks to everyone for joining us today. Thanks to Anthony Slater and Quinn Cook for joining us. Joe Fortenbaugh, of course. All of you, enjoy yourself and be careful out there, okay? Smart, smart decisions, everybody. Let's make adult smart decisions. Legal ones these days, too. So have fun. Just, you know, moderation. Good ideas. Use good ideas. Good judgment.
Do you.
Absolutely.
And let everyone else do that.
And remember, sports don't build character, they reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
Dan Perignon.
I saw the bottle.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.